You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. I'm Corbin Smith, host of the Locked On Seahawks podcast, and I'm joined by Rob Rang. What a game we witnessed yesterday at CenturyLink Field. The Seahawks winning in overtime 40-34 to move to 7-2 on the season. We'll be talking a bunch about that game over the next few episodes. We're going to open up the show. It's officially week 10 in the NFL. We're going to scope out the playoff race and Seattle's standing as well as their upcoming schedule. In the second quarter, you've got some mailbag questions. We'll answer as many as we can. And then we'll close out the show with some offensive takeaways from yesterday's win at CenturyLink Field. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. The second half of the season is well underway, which means we've finally reached the point, Rob, where it's worth discussing if the playoffs started today. And when you see this on like ESPN and NFL.com in like week three, you're like, well, we're only 6 months away from the playoffs, you know. But now we actually are to the point where the contenders are really starting to emerge. And considering Seattle has a bunch of games coming up against a bunch of those contenders, I think it's definitely time now to start looking at how the playoffs stand. Standings are shaking out.
Yeah, exactly. I think that when you look at the rest of the Seattle schedule, the fact that they are going to be playing Minnesota, they are going to be playing obviously San Francisco twice. Then you have a lot of games here that are going to determine where Seattle stands in the whole playoff race, whether they're going to be hosting a game, whether they're going to be on the road, who they might be going up against the road against. And so it's going to be a fascinating second half of the season, not only from a Seahawks perspective, but for the rest of the NFL as well.
Looking at the standings in the NFC, it's just so different than the AFC. The AFC, you've got New England, and then there's a couple teams that have three losses. It's totally different in the NFC. Very top-heavy. San Francisco still undefeated, the lone undefeated team remaining after the Ravens took down the Patriots last night. They're 8-0. Seattle's getting ready to face them next Monday night in San Francisco. New Orleans, the number two seed at 7-1. They withstood Drew Brees being out for five games, and they won those games with Teddy Bridgewater at quarterback. Green Bay, 7-2, lost their second game yesterday. Dallas, they're leading the NFC least right now at 4-3. That is a division that's been a dumpster fire to this point. I'd expect one of those teams will figure it out before the season's over with and be dangerous in the playoffs. But right now, pretty pedestrian division. Seattle's holding the number five spot. If the playoffs started today, they would be the first wild card in the NFC, and they would actually be playing at Dallas. So 2 years in a row, they'd be playing the Dallas Cowboys on the road to open the playoffs. Minnesota just barely holding on to that final wild card spot. And behind them, you've got the Rams and Panthers at 5-3, the Eagles at 5-4, and then there's a pretty substantial drop-off. There may be a team like the Lions if they got hot. They're 3-4-1 right now. Maybe they could claw back in it. But there's a pretty big drop-off after those last couple teams. Interestingly, though, Rob, like you were mentioning, they have to play almost all of these teams during the final seven games of the year. They're starting at San Francisco next Monday night. They've got a bye at the Eagles, the Vikings, at the Rams, at the Panthers. Then they're playing the Cardinals and 49ers at home to close out the season. The only team with a losing record there is the Cardinals. So this is going to be a brutal closing stretch for Seattle. They should be very grateful they've got seven wins right now.
Well, absolutely. And it's, to me, we kind of go back to that Saints game. Because the Saints are the team that is sitting there at 7-1 right now that I think that you have to kind of keep an eye on. Now, the Saints do play the 49ers still. And so you're going to have one of the top teams that's obviously going to have a loss or a tie, after that game in week 14. So that there is a lot of football left to be played, Corbin. But I think that it's kind of fun that we're looking ahead to the playoffs. Because as you said, the NFC is so much about the haves and the have-nots, where the AFC is a muddled mess. I think that you look at the Saints, you look at the Green Bay Packers, you look at the San Francisco 49ers. Those are the three teams that you have to worry about. Seattle has such a history against the Saints, against all those teams, really. But the fact that you still have two games against the San Francisco 49ers, then you hold the future in your own hands. So let's play some football and see what happens.
Yeah, the 49ers have a bunch of tough games coming up. They got to play the Seahawks twice. You mentioned the Saints as well. And I believe they still have to play the Ravens on their schedule as well. I don't think they've played Baltimore yet. I have to double check, but obviously that's a very good team that just beat the Patriots. So they've got a lot of tough games coming up. I really think the main moral of the story right now, Seattle still controls its own destiny. They've got four divisional games left to play, two of them against the division-leading 49ers, but this is also an absolute gauntlet. They right now have the toughest win percentage for any of the 32 NFL teams as far as their opponents they're going to be playing the last 2 months here. That was even going into this week's game against the Buccaneers. And so now you remove the weakest links as far as standings are concerned from the remaining second half schedule. It's going to be even tougher, and the 49ers are weighing that upward a little bit with being 8-0 and having to play them twice. But certainly, this is a very difficult closing stretch. We know the Seahawks have a tendency to finish strong. They've done it pretty much every year Pete Carroll has been in Seattle. Got off to a good start yesterday with the win over Tampa Bay. It might not have been how fans wanted it to be, but it's not out of the question these last seven games that Seattle could go 3-4 during this stretch. And that would get them to 10-6. And unlike last year, looking at how many teams already have six wins, I don't know if that's going to be good enough necessarily to get to the playoffs this year. So very critical for them. In my opinion, they need to get to 11 wins to ensure they get to the playoffs. They're obviously going to be pushing for more than that because it seems hard to believe they'd be able to win the division with only 11 wins. But of course, like I said, the 49ers have a lot of tough games coming up, a lot of football left to play. But certainly, this is an exciting time of year now that we can start to see how things are taking shape.
No, it really is. And I look at the Seahawks schedule, and I think you're absolutely right. I mean, they could have a sub 500 record down the stretch because they are playing some quality football teams down the, you know, in the second half of the season. But as you mentioned, Corbin, I mean, that's the history of this team. Russell Wilson is playing at MVP level. He's played at MVP level essentially all season long. I have a great deal of faith in Ken Norton and Seattle's defense and being able to kind of rectify some of the situations. It's amazing how Seattle has had so many games this year when they've been down at halftime and yet they win. And that is the resiliency that has me so encouraged about where this team not only is right now, but where they're going in the future. And then you also mentioned the San Francisco 49ers schedule. And obviously, that's the team that Seattle has to worry about the most as far as the division. But, I mean, look at their remaining schedule. So, obviously, this upcoming Monday night, they're going to host the Seahawks. And then they have Week 11 against the Cardinals. And the Cardinals are not the same team anymore that they were previously. They're playing pretty good football.
They should have won the other night. They should have won that game.
Exactly. Then they have the Packers. They have the Ravens. They're in New Orleans. Then they go to New Orleans. Then they host the Falcons. And we know the Falcons with Matt Ryan are a whole different team. Then they host the Rams. And then they're back in Seattle in Week 17. So I think you can make an argument that the 49ers are the team that could be going 3-4 down the stretch every bit as much as the Seahawks going 3-4 during that same schedule.
Yeah, for the fans that are saying the division is lost, Seattle's a game and a half out, and really, I just kind of throw that number out the window just from the fact they do have both their games remaining against them. You can't understate it. This game coming up on Monday night is going to be crucial. If the Seahawks lose that game, they're going to be 2.5 games out, and really, you should call it 3.5 because you just lost your divisional game. They will get another opportunity against them later in the season that mitigates that to an extent, but certainly a huge game. Both teams have really challenging schedules coming up in the second half of the season. We'll just have to see how everything plays out. When we come back after the break, as we do on every Monday, you guys dished out some awesome Seahawks and NFL questions. Rob and I are going to answer as many as we can. Don't go away. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Before we move forward, let's talk about sex. Good sex. Remember the days when you were always ready to go and you could increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed? Listen up. BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. BlueChew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Blue Chew is prescribed online and ships straight to your door in a discreet package. So no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BLUEchew.com. Promo code LOCKEDON to try for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast. Welcome back, 12s. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, alongside Rob Rang. Later in the show, we'll start to dissect and analyze the Seahawks Week 9 victory over the Bucks on the offensive side of the football. But first, as we do every Monday, it's time for our Locked On Seahawks mailbag. Let's get to it. First question here coming from Jason writes, how would you best use receiver Josh Gordon in Seattle's scheme?
Well, I think that you use him the same way the Cleveland Browns did, the same way the Patriots did. You put him on the outside. You let him just use his incredible physical gifts in terms of his size, his speed, in a very similar way that Seattle has used DK Metcalf. But I'm not so sure that Josh Gordon's going to come in here and come into Seattle and be the difference maker that people want him to be. I think that he is, rather than being the difference maker, I think that he's going to be a little bit of the decoy. I would not be surprised at all to see Russell Wilson try to throw some passes over the top, maybe as a red zone threat early on. But I just don't – I'm a little skeptical, because I still believe that Seattle's top two receivers are the top two receivers that they've had all year long, the all-pro that is Tyler Lockett, and the rookie of the year that is DK Metcalf.
You know, I have to disagree with you on a few things here, Rob, because going back and watching, again, I've got more film to watch. I've only had a chance to look at a couple games, but I'm actually really intrigued by using Gordon some in the slot, almost like a tight end, because his ability over the middle of the field, especially running skinny posts, running down the seam, he's such a matchup problem because of his size, and I'm worried a little bit about the burst. I haven't seen quite the same burst out of him this year. Maybe he's been injured and that's what's caused it, but he just hasn't looked quite as explosive off the line of scrimmage to me. But this is a guy that can still make really impressive catches in traffic. He's going to win those contested catches battles. He's a guy that, you mentioned the red zone, I think certainly could help make up for Will Disley's loss a little bit. And there's a long way to go before we can get to this point. He's got to learn the playbook, and he's got to find his way into the rotation, which isn't going to be easy necessarily. Like Pete Carroll said, we have no expectations right now. We just got to see what he looks like at practice. He's got to learn the playbook, and then we'll go from there. But I could certainly see him being a player, he's going to get plenty of reps on the outside because that's where his strength lies. But I actually was pretty impressed with some routes he ran from the slot and just the physicality that he brings in the middle of the field. I could see the Seahawks moving him around a little bit. And even Doug Farrar of USA Today, who I've had a chance to talk to briefly about this, he even mentioned why not consider using him kind of like a tight end. And that kind of goes along with my idea of playing him in the slot a fair amount. So I think there's a little bit of flexibility here. But at the same time, Pete Carroll's completely right. Temper your expectations right now. We have to see where Josh Gordon fits in with this football team, and then maybe he can start to make some plays on the field. But I would not anticipate he's just going to come in and put up 150 yards in a game. That's not going to happen, especially with the receivers they've already got there. He's going to have to earn his niche in Seattle. Second question from Max tweets, you two rave nonstop about Shaquille Griffin, but then he has a game like yesterday. How can they trust him when he doesn't show up against players like Evans?
Well, because he's going against a 6'5", 230-pound receiver that, as I mentioned before, and you and I did our fantasy trade, and the very guy that I mentioned was Mike Evans, because that's the kind of guy that Mike Evans is he dominates just about everybody that he plays against when he catches the football, which he sometimes drops the ball, and when Jameis Winston gets him the football. Mike Evans is a spectacular player. Shaquille Griffin, in my opinion, is playing at a Pro Bowl level. But Mike Evans is a physically dominant wide receiver. He's the guy that I think Seahawks fans should hope that DK Metcalf can become. And DK Metcalf has better straight line speed. So I think sometimes you have to tip your cap to the number one overall selection, Jameis Winston, another first-round pick and a future Hall of Fame wide receiver, in my opinion. And those guys are rare in Mike Evans. and yet you still win the football game. So I'm a big fan of Shaquille Griffin. I think that he made the plays when he had to make the plays. You saw the pass breakup late in the fourth quarter that led to Seattle, you know, keeping this game close when, frankly, they were getting blown out of their own building early in this game. So, I'm going to continue to kind of, you know, pound the table for Shaquille Griffin because I think he's having a terrific season. It's proving that he is not just a function of Seattle's scheme. He is a legitimate shutdown kind of corner who has that kind of athletic ability. But sometimes they got the wide receiver and the quarterback, the perfect throw can beat the perfect defense. And sometimes that happened, and it certainly happened against the Buccaneers yesterday.
I wouldn't be too worried about Shaquille Griffin after yesterday. He gave up some catches, sure, but he's had a great year. And I don't think people realize, if you were listening to our show last week, we talked about this on multiple occasions, but Tampa Bay has some really explosive weapons on the outside. I could argue, you could make a really good argument that they have the best 1-2 tandem at receiver in the league. At least from a yardage standpoint, they do. Yep. And when Jameis Winston is on, he can be a very good quarterback. The problem is he's extremely erratic. And really the real issue was that defensive line not being able to get any pressure on him again. And he was too comfortable back there. And when you let Jameis Winston get comfortable with the weapons he's got, it doesn't matter who your corners are. And obviously Seattle's corners still have a lot of room to grow. Trey Flowers had kind of a rough game yesterday. But I'm not going to sit here and suddenly be like, wow, this totally diminishes the season Shaquille Griffin's had. No, it doesn't. I mean, he gave up some catches yesterday, but he still made a few plays as well. So I don't think he played a horrible game necessarily. Marquise Blair had another really solid game playing the free safety position. So they have to get the pass rush figured out. To me, that's the area of concern that if it doesn't get addressed, it's going to come back to bite him. And they've been able to withstand it to this point, but that needs fixed moving forward. Brian writes, how concerned should fans be that Jaron Reed doesn't seem to be doing much? Rob, you and I were talking about this before the show. I'm not necessarily sure that that's the case. Yesterday, he made some plays.
He did make some plays. I think when you watch it, then, you know, and really focus on him rather than the lack of statistics in the box score, then you see that Jaron Reed is flying around the football. He's just not finishing the plays. You know, that early touchdown run that Ronald Jones is able to kind of break a couple of different tackles. Then, you know, again, you got to kind of tip your cap to him. He's making some spectacular plays. But Jaron Reed was in position to make the tackle. He hit a guy. He hit Ronald Jones. I mean, Ronald Jones is 220 pounds. Jaron Reed's 300 pounds. You expect the 300-pounder to be able to knock down the 220-pounder. But so there's been flashes. But at the same time, I think that we have to kind of consider the fact that this is essentially week three of the preseason for Jaron Reed. I mean, he didn't get the opportunity to kind of play and kind of develop the way that the rest of Seattle is going. So I expect his play to result in more big plays, in more tackles, in more sacks. But at the same time, to me, what was so special about last year is the 1-2 punch that was Frank Clark and Jaron Reed, and the fact that Seattle was able to kind of scheme some things. I do expect Seattle's sack numbers to improve, but I don't think that you necessarily can expect that that Jaron Reed is going to be the 10.5 sack guy that he was a year ago. I expect there to be 3 or 4 or 5 sacks from him the rest of the way, not this explosion of 3 or 4 sacks the way he had last season.
I think he'd have a better chance to get there if the guys on the outside were wreaking havoc. And Jadeveon Clowney is still playing well. I thought he did some nice things yesterday, but unfortunately the pass rush numbers have not been there for him. And Ziggy Ansah had another really quiet game. They just haven't been able to get productivity off the edge. And I kind of have an idea for something that could maybe help that. We'll talk about that a little bit tomorrow. But that has, in turn, affected the interior guys to an extent. I expect as we continue the season that we're going to start seeing last year's version of Jaron Reed come out. And you're starting to see some flashes with him getting off of blocks and stuff that's starting to look like last year. But he hasn't been able to put everything together. I wouldn't get too worried about this right now. Alicia M. tweets, this is one of the better questions we got today. Is there a reason why Seattle keeps being reported as interested in Antonio Brown? None of us want to see him on this team. I've got a lot of comments about not wanting him on the team, but then again, people keep asking me about it.
Well, I think that it's the same reason why Josh Gordon was kind of linked to the Seahawks and why you know, so many good players out there that get themselves released or even draft are linked to Seattle because, as Pete Carroll and John Schneider have said ad nauseum, that they are going to basically turn over every stone to find those unique players. And Antonio Brown is a unique player. I mean, he's an unbelievable talent. But at the same time, look at the distraction that he was in Oakland, in Pittsburgh, in New England. There's a reason why nobody has picked him up. So, you know, for the same reason why I kind of argued against Seattle going for Josh Gordon, just because I thought that he could be a distraction to what has already been a very successful season for the Seahawks, especially in the offensive side of the football. Antonio Brown is so much more of a distraction. So I think you're going to continue to see that, because Seattle is going to look for different players who can possibly make their team better. But at the same time, I think that there's a lot of people out there who feel the way that she does, and I think the Seahawks, at this point at least, have proven that they feel the same way.
I think it all comes down to Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson, people forget about this, but he and Antonio Brown were working out together for several years in the offseason, throwing passes and all kinds of stuff. And so I think there's a relationship clearly there between those. And from the reports now coming out, Russell Wilson's been the one that's been pushing for that. And I think if the legal issues weren't still persisting for Antonio Brown, they wouldn't have claimed Gordon. I wouldn't be shocked if they signed Brown, because Russell Wilson was pushing for it. And you can see it on the field. He loves DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, but it does seem like he's not targeting other receivers as often. Only one of the receivers got targets yesterday. Malik Turner had one that didn't count because of a penalty. But, you know, there's that idea, bring me one more weapon here, really watch this passing game take off. It's a different Seattle team than we've seen in the past. The passing game is the biggest strength for this football team above everything else. And so adding Antonio Brown, again, we've talked about this time and time again, talent standpoint, he would take this offense over the top, but he is a much bigger distraction than what Josh Gordon is. The reports I've heard, I've talked about this numerous times, Josh Gordon is a good guy off the field. He's a good teammate. That's what everybody that's played on the same team with him that's currently on the Seahawks has said, and I don't think they're just lying to you just to, you know, be nice. I'm pretty sure this guy, despite his track record off the field as far as substance abuse, I think he's a decent human being and not going to be a problem in the locker room. Antonio Brown, we know that is not the case with what happened in Pittsburgh, Oakland, even briefly in New England. So I don't see it happening at this point. I can't say never, because if Josh Gordon doesn't work out and they get rid of him quickly, we could see him try to go, especially if Antonio Brown gets cleared of his charges and that gets taken out of the way, the league isn't going to discipline him, then I could see him doing that. But I find it highly unlikely at this point that Seahawks fans have to worry about that. Last question real quick from Mitch. When we can't rush the passer, what does this say about LJ Collier? Why can't he get on the field?
Because he wasn't a great pass rusher at TCU. He's not going to be a great pass rusher in the NFL. I mean, I hate to put it that bluntly, but you know, that's the thing. LJ Collier is a good football player. He's a lot like Rasheem Green. His ability or his talent lies in his versatility, his ability to play up in the line of scrimmage. He does give you some pass rush. I mean, in terms of his, he has enough quickness. He uses his hands very well. He's got incredibly long arms. He's a physical player. He's going to bat down some passes. He's going to be Johnny on the spot the same way that Rasheem Green was when he picked up that fumble and rumbled 30, 40 yards down the field. But if you're expecting him to be a 10-sack guy, 10-sack guys don't go in the late portion of the first round in a round dominated by defensive linemen the way that last year's historic class was. So I think that it's the same reason why you're not seeing Rashad Penny play more snaps for the Seahawks at the running back position, because you have a superior player already ahead of them. You have Jadeveon Clowney. You have Ziggy Ansah, who made some nice plays yesterday as well. Actually, I thought he played one of his better games yesterday. Again, the aforementioned Rasheem Green, the fact that Brandon Jackson started in the game, rather than LJ Collier or any of the other aforementioned defensive ends. I think that, again, this is more a reflection of the fact that LJ Collier did not start at TCU until his senior season. Seattle is betting on his upside rather than expecting him to come in and be a superstar. The same way, again, at the running back position, Chris Carson is just a superior player right now, especially in Seattle's scheme, where they're going to focus on running the ball over and over. The toughness. Everybody's going to focus on Chris Carson dropping a couple of balls. What about the breakthrough, 45-yard touch or 45-yard run that he had? The incredible, behind a back basically tip to himself reception that he had to extend that game late and help Seattle get in position to win the game. I mean, to me, everybody is complaining about the lack of success of Seattle's former early picks rather than focusing on what is actually putting them in the win column.
The big issue he's dealing with right now is he's just simply not good enough at this point. Even with the guys in front of him struggling, he has simply not been good enough to justify getting more reps. And the chances he is getting on the field, he's just simply not doing enough right now to justify extensive playing time. Even with Quentin Jefferson out, he just hasn't been able to do anything with those opportunities. And he's been behind the eight ball since being out all of training camp and the preseason. Treat yourself to the meal you deserve and have your favorite restaurants come to you with the DoorDash app. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the app and enter promo code LOCKEDON. Coming up after the break, when we go into the third quarter, we're going to start looking at yesterday's win for the Seahawks, a 40-34 overtime victory over the Buccaneers. We're going to be talking offense today, especially the stellar play from Russell Wilson, who continues to bolster his MVP candidacy. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm Corbin Smith alongside my co-host Rob Rang. The Seahawks moving to 7-2 yesterday with a 40-34 overtime win over the Buccaneers. It was a thriller. Kind of started off sloppy for the Seahawks. Fell behind 21-7. But as Russell Wilson has done so many times already this year, he willed his team back. They ended up taking the lead in the fourth quarter. Buccaneers came right back. Jameis Winston really was going punch for punch with Russell Wilson yesterday. Up until overtime, Wilson gets the football back, and the Seahawks go down and throws a touchdown to Jacob Hollister. Game over. Just another fantastic effort for Wilson. 29 for 43, 378 passing yards, 5 touchdowns. The third time in his career that he's done that, and no interceptions. So he still has just one pick through 9 games. Just putting together a sensational season. And now the Seahawks, again, they're 7-2. It might not be pretty getting to that point, but they're one of only 4 teams that has a record that good in the league right now.
Yeah, exactly. And Russell Wilson is the primary reason for that, as you said, Corbin. He really has put together an MVP caliber season. I mean, this is a team that is built to win in the running game and defense, and Russell Wilson doesn't give a damn about any of that. He's just playing at such an extraordinary level. I mean, that's what I would ask Seahawks fans and, frankly, NFL fans to just watch the tape. I mean, my goodness, the passes that he's throwing at this point are just exquisite. I mean, he is putting the ball in the place where his receivers have an opportunity to make the play, and defensive backs rarely have an opportunity to make any kind of move on the football. I mean, we're seeing a rookie in DK Metcalf make extraordinary reactions to the football. We're just kind of becoming used to the fact that Tyler Lockett and Russell Wilson have an incredible rapport that they had before. But that was something that we kind of expected more from Russell Wilson and Doug Baldwin in the past. And Tyler Lockett has taken to a whole different level. So, you know, to me, Russell Wilson is a story, but right there along with him is Tyler Lockett. I just mentioned DK Metcalf and what he's been doing. And I'm just excited, just as much excited as was Pete Carroll in what we've seen from Joey Hunt. And the fact that in his first start, he was going up against one of the most physically dominant defensive linemen I've ever seen at the college football level in Vita Vea, and he held up very, very well. So to me, you can knock all you want about on the defensive side of the football. I think there's very few things that you can knock about Seattle's performance against Tampa Bay on the offensive side of the ball.
We talked about this on Friday when Nick was on the show, and we were looking at keys to the football game. And to me, this was something I even wrote about as well, that this to me was the game that I wanted to see. Brian Schottenheimer, are you willing to go against philosophy a little bit here? We know they love to establish the run and play physical defense, whatnot, but this was the game where I was just hoping to see Brian Schottenheimer come out and say, all right, Russell, I'm giving you the keys here. We're going to air it out. They come out their first possession. They score a touchdown, only one run. Every other play was a pass play for Russell Wilson. So they came out just firing, throwing the football all over the place, and they stuck with that most of the game. They ran the football some, and Chris Carson got to 105 rushing yards, the most the Buccaneers have given up this year to an individual back. So they were able to find some success running the ball on Tampa Bay. But don't kid yourself. This game was won because Russell Wilson was given those keys, and he just orchestrated scoring drive after scoring drive after scoring drive with his brilliance in the pocket, outside of the pocket. The throw, the second touchdown that he made to Tyler Lockett, it was a two-yard touchdown, but that was one of the tougher throws you can make. I mean, the quarterback or the cornerback Dean was all over him, and Russell Wilson just found a way to get the ball just over his outstretched fingertips, and Lockett reels it in for the touchdown. Those are the kind of plays that those two are making right now that are such difficult throwing catches, and yet they make them look routine, and they're doing this every single week. Like Pete Carroll said, Tyler Lockett has been ridiculous. He doesn't even know what to say. You know, how can I assess the chemistry that those two have at this point? Because they're just week after week torching opponents. And you have to believe at this point, there are a couple other duos out there, quarterbacks and receivers, that are on the same playing field. But week after week, the production these guys are putting up, Tyler Lockett making 13 receptions yesterday, a single game career high for him, 152 yards, a good chunk of the yardage that Wilson threw for. It's just the relationship those two have is remarkable. It's very similar to what we've seen in the past from, combos like Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison, and if you're looking more recently, Matt Ryan with Julio Jones. They all get it done a little bit differently, but the numbers stack up, and right now Tyler Lockett is playing at an all-pro level.
No, he really is. And you mentioned some of the Tyler Lockett's numbers. I mean, 13 catches for 152 yards, two touchdowns. I mean, they deserve repeating. And to me, the most crazy number is the targets. In Seattle's offense, for a wide receiver to have 18 targets, which is what Tyler Lockett had, I mean, that is just mind-boggling. That's video game stuff. That's playing the backyard stuff. You know, and certainly the way that the game went with Seattle being down 21-7, you mentioned the fact that Brian Schottenheimer did a terrific job early on. I mean, he just recognized the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense for its strengths, number one in the league in run defense, and among the bottom five in pass defense, you absolutely had to attack them in the passing game. And the fact that Seattle was able to do so early and often throughout this game, obviously down the stretch when they, you know, seized the game in the second half and obviously in overtime, you know, that to me is just the fact that this offense is just humming right along. And so it's kind of, it's on the defense, it's on the special teams, frankly, to be able to kind of catch up, because the offense is playing at a Super Bowl level. The defense and special teams are playing at especially the defense, a playoff level, and we'll see about special teams. But that would be my one knock, is that, you know, Seattle, obviously Jason Myers has to play at a higher level. I mean, Chris Carson still had a couple of fumbles, and so if we're going to kind of talk about offense, we have to mention that. But at the same time, I just thought that we were watching things that are, you know, about as good as you're going to see in all of the NFL. And just, you know, sometimes you just have to kind of take a step back and recognize that you know, even in Seattle, even way out here in the West, and I know a lot of the people around the NFL don't pay much attention, they certainly are now, with Seattle at 7-2 and about to go on the road against the only undefeated team in the NFL, at least for right now.
There was so much emphasis this offseason put on, is Tyler Lockett going to be able to fill the void for Doug Baldwin? And obviously he's been able to do that, but seeing what DK Metcalf is doing now, six catches for 123 yards and a touchdown yesterday, and that was the throw that Russell Wilson made on that 53-yard touchdown. And a lot of fans are going to be like, oh, Metcalf was wide open. That is still not an easy pass to make, because he threw it so perfectly that Metcalf caught it fully in stride. And we know when Metcalf is at full speed, he's as fast as any receiver that you're going to find out there with that incredible 6'3", 230-pound frame. He can book, and he was running full speed. Russell Wilson led him perfectly, didn't have to slow down at all, hit him in stride, and then he turns on the sideline and in the corner. I mean, Jamel Dean has good speed. He ran in the 4.3s, and yep, he just couldn't catch up. He couldn't. He dove and completely whiffed. DK Metcalf was just too fast for him, and the difference maker was Russell Wilson leading him perfectly. But when you see Metcalf making plays like that, now that creates a major problem for defenses, because you can't afford to double team Tyler Lockett, because now you've got DK Metcalf on the other side to worry about. And again, all expectations need to be tempered, but if they could get anything out of Josh Gordon, to go with those two guys. Imagine how much easier life is going to be for Lockett and Metcalf, because teams know that Gordon is a guy that can take the top off the defense and can make big plays. So again, don't get ahead of yourselves and think that that's going to be what happens, but certainly Gordon is a guy that could come in and could make an impact if everything's clicking and he's got his head on straight. DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett are torching people just with themselves. You bring in another target to go with them, that passing game is going to be even better. You talked about Joey Hunt and how well he played. Pete Carroll was unprompted on this today at his press conference. He wasn't even asked about Joey Hunt. He immediately made sure to praise him for his play yesterday. And I thought the offensive line as a whole did a really nice job. This is a tough team to play against because we know Todd Bowles is going to blitz, and he's going to blitz from everywhere. They were blitzing almost 50% of opposing dropbacks going into this game, and they brought an extra guy or two several times in this game. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they were consistently bringing extra pressure, as you would expect from a defense coordinated by Bowles, and they gave up three sacks, the Seahawks did, in a quick time period. They had a couple drives, they gave up three sacks, but you take those couple possessions out of the books, and they did an outstanding job. One of the reasons Russell Wilson had such gaudy numbers is that he had time to look to his first, second, third reads and be able to torch a secondary that hasn't proven they can defend the pass very well. Offensive line deserves a ton of credit for that.
They really do. I mean, you're absolutely right, Corbin, what you just said. I mean, that the offensive line does deserve a ton of credit, and that's with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers hitting Russell Wilson 11 times. And as you mentioned, three different sacks. But at the same time, Todd Bowles' defense is all about feast or famine. And that's a kind of overused football cliche, but that's exactly what Todd Bowles and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers use, is they will send their linebackers, they'll send their safeties, they'll send their corners. They are going to kind of attack you from creative angles. And so kudos to Seattle's offensive line, that especially Joey Hunt, as I mentioned before, going against Vita Vea, and Vita Vea had some big plays. I mean, there were times that he just simply bull rushed Joey Hunt and pushed him all the way back into the pocket, and you know, he didn't have a monster game from a statistical standpoint. Three tackles, didn't have a tackle for loss, didn't have a sack, but at the same time, he did create pressure. But Russell Wilson just had truly one of the spectacular performances, not only of his career, but that I've seen over the last 20 years. In watching college and NFL football. I mean, he was just a magician. And, again, credit Seattle's offensive line, credit the wide receivers, but the big story was Russell Wilson and the fact that he put about as much of an MVP kind of stamp on this game and frankly this season as I've ever seen when it comes to where we are in the schedule with the Seahawks sitting here, you know, nine games into the year.
I think I'd be remiss not to mention, we've talked Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf, Lockett, the offensive. I mean, there were, like you said, there were very few things to be upset about with the offensive side of the football. Brian Schottenheimer, with an outstanding game plan, came in and schematically torched the Buccaneers in this game. He did a great job. I think it would be remiss not to mention tight end Jacob Hollister in this football game, though. Luke Wilson suffers a rib injury, and Luke Wilson played through it. Not a ton of snaps, but he was able to still continue and give them a few snaps. Sounds like he's hoping to continue playing into this next game against the 49ers, so hopefully that's good news for him. But they only have two tight ends dressed for this football game. Wilson goes down. Hollister plays 80% of the snaps, and I actually thought he did a decent job as a run blocker on some of the plays that I watched. He had something he missed on, but you can't fault the kid for effort. You can tell he's really trying to improve in that area. He's going to give you the best that he's got, and he actually had a couple decent blocks in the run game, but where he really made the impact is where you would expect, with him being a really athletic tight end that you can move around the formation. Four receptions for 37 yards, two touchdowns, including the game winner in overtime, and really his most important play, arguably, was a play that he didn't get a catch on. End of the first half, the Seahawks are down 21-7. Russell Wilson throws the ball to him in the end zone on a long vertical route, and he gets held for a pass interference penalty, and Seahawks get the ball at the goal line, end up scoring. Now it's 21-13. Jason Myers missed an extra point, too, but the Seahawks are going into the break just down one score instead of being down 14, and Who knows if that actually happens without that pass interference call? So a huge game. We finally get to see what Jacob Hollister is capable of doing in this offense. He was the talk all offseason long after they got him from the Patriots in a trade. This is a guy that's going to add a new dimension to our tight end group. Now that Will Dissly's out for the year, and Luke Wilson's banged up a little bit, this is a huge deal for them, especially since Ed Dixon didn't return this weekend, to see what Hollister can do. He and Wilson are starting to build a rapport, and that's a really exciting development for this offense going into this huge game against the 49ers.
It really is. I mean, we've talked about this in previous episodes that, you know, the Seahawks are masterful of trying to feature a different receiving target, you know, in different games to make their next opponent have to kind of think about them. I would be stunned if Jacob Hollister has the same type of performance next week against the San Francisco, or this week against the 49ers. But at the same time, now they have to think about him. They have to think about Josh Gordon. You know, and so that's what Seattle has done a terrific job of doing. Hollister, he's 6'4", 245 pounds. He came from Wyoming. He's not used to blocking guys who are 270, 290 pounds. That he's going as an inline tight end, but you put this kid in space the way that New England did previously and the way that Seattle is doing now, and you have the strong running game that Seattle has. You have the dominant two outside receivers that they have in Lockett and Metcalf, and there's a lot of space over the middle to take full advantage of. Jacob Hollister did exactly that. Like I said before, I think the Seattle's offense is just getting going, and take a former San Francisco 49er kind of guy's words, get your popcorn ready because it's about to get fun.
It really is. It's exciting seeing how this offense is humming, and you got to believe this is going to just open up the run game too when they're playing defense. And that's something I think that, and we'll talk about this later this week, San Francisco, if there's an area that I think you can beat them at, I think you can run the football on them. The Cardinals were able to bring in Kenyon Drake last week, his first game coming over from the Dolphins, and he had a big game running the football. I think you can run the ball on these guys, and that can help slow down their pass rush a little bit. We'll leave that for later in the week as we start getting deeper into that game, but certainly the offense, there's a lot to be excited about. When we come back tomorrow for Tuesday's show, maybe a little bit less positive talking about the defense, but we'll try to come up with as many good things as we can to balance out the issues that still are recurring with the pass rush, not being able to get anything done, and secondary troubles, you name it. The defense is still a work in progress. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at CorbinSmithNFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Ring. If you'd like to be a featured sponsor on the Locked On Seahawks podcast, you can contact me, LockedSeahawks@gmail.com. Make sure to subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is, by visiting us, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on tomorrow's show, it's Throwback Tuesday. As we do every week, we're going to look at some former Seahawks that were also standouts for the 49ers. There are more of them out there than you may believe. There's actually been quite a few players that have played for both teams, especially in recent years. They've traded off players quite a bit. We'll also look at some defensive takeaways from Sunday's game. Looking forward to it. Hope you'll listen in. Go Hawks.